Did y'all hear me? Oh my God, I said y'all. It's all you. Yes. So you Southern people are changing my accent, and it's only been. I'm a registered chameleon, you know, just like a lot of addicts, and so people's accents rub off on me very quickly. My name is Mikey P, and I am a recovered drug addict. I am from Madison, Wisconsin. My home group is the Spiritually Lit meeting of Drug Addicts Anonymous. And if you are in Madison, we meet at the Eastside Alano Club Monday nights at 7 p.m. We also have a Wednesday at noon. So if you find yourself in need of a great, here we are. We have our representatives there, our GSR from that particular Spiritual Gangsters, I think is what it's called. Yeah. And I guess I'm up here to talk about sex and relationships. What I learn about sex and relationships mainly comes from my experience as a sponsor. You know, after my sponsees have about a year, their phone calls and 10 steps become almost exclusively sex and relationships. You know, and you get better and better at kind of being God's, you know, conduit of information when, you know, you get a lot of these phone calls. My personal experience with sex and relationships, you know, on page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems, right? Driven by 100 forms of fear, stop right there, you know? Because that could be it for me right there. I mean, that is the root of all of my issues. And when it came to me, I am a straight male, so the opposite sex, absolutely afraid of them 100%, right? We have fight or flight. We also have freeze, you know? And that's me, freeze, 100%. I can't talk to them. I can't look at them, you know? Most people you say, like, hey, could you tell her that I like her? I got to have, like, 4 or 5 people to get to that point. I'm absolutely 100% frightened of women. And when I found drugs and alcohol, it boosted up my confidence. So I could let them talk to me, you know. But that's as far as I could go. I really wanted alcohol to make me that guy that, you know, she's attractive. I'm going to go and talk to her. I have all this. I still didn't have that kind of courage, you know. I mean, I still just had that kind of paralyzing fear. But it helped out, you know, at least in those types of relationships. So that kind of led to, it was, if I was going to be in a relationship, it's because somebody else initiated it. You know, somebody else found me attractive. Somebody else found I had something to offer. And so they'd ask me out. And that was great. Oh, wonderful. Because at that point, I could turn on the charm a little bit. I could have a little bit more confidence. But I couldn't break that barrier to ask out the person that I wanted to ask out. And it led to a lot of relationships with very strong women, you know. And I love strong women. Absolutely. I still do to this day. But there's, as we all know, there's strength. And then there's, you know, underneath that, there's a whole lot of, other levels of communication that don't always work out very well. But I basically kind of just was dragged along through a bunch of relationships, you know. My first marriage, pretty much the same thing. She had to make the first move, and then we were together, and it was great. And she said, you know, I think we're in love. And I'm like, yeah, that's right, we are. You know? And, you know, and that was a different story. I lived overseas, and, you know, it was a matter of, it was a marriage of convenience, and that was the greatest divorce ever. You know, if you're going to have one of those divorces, we were like, you know, out to dinner, and she was like, I want you to be happy. And I want you to be happy. We had the rings off that night. We divided up our shit, and then I had a new apartment. And, of course, I thought to myself, now I can go out and, you know, sow my, you know, wild oats. I can finally be that guy I wanted to be. And 10 years of alcohol and drug use did make me a very pleasing person to be around. I didn't date very much at that time. And I was at my lowest point. And I like to share from the podium that I was a very low bottom drunk and drug user, drug dealer. I was living on people's couches. I was still a musician, but I lost my day job, and so all I'm doing is gigs, and I'm living in the studio, and I'm living on other people's couches because I got people looking for me, drug dealers are looking for me. I'm at my lowest point. But at a certain point, somebody came into my life and decided that we were going to be in love. Yeah, I got a new wife, right? So she came into my life, started following me around, and at that point, like I'm a cocaine crack guy, right? So if you showed me a room full of beautiful women and a room full of coke, going to the coke, yeah. You know what I mean? If you guys want to come over here, I'm going to be doing some drugs, but that's going to be my primary issue there. But the thing is, she kept coming around, you know, and still was kind of showing up to my shows. But I was absolutely petrified. I was petrified of her. I was petrified of where I was in my life. But she said, you know, hey, we're going to hang out. And I'm like, okay, great. And about a year and a half later, she said, we should get married. I'm like, absolutely, we should. And you're going to need to propose. And I'm like, I am. I'm going to, you know. And she goes, this is the ring that I want. And it was just very much like that. And I had a ready-made family. You know, and because of her support, I had a car, and then I got a job, and then I got, you know, an apartment in Madison, and we had a house out in Viroqua, and for the first part of our relationship, I'm still drunk and doing a lot of drugs, but eventually I sober up, and my father was the supreme father, phenomenal man. You know, I would say that any parents, you know, your job is, you know, especially as a father, is to show your son how to treat your wife and to show your daughter how she should deserve to be treated, right? And that was my father. He was showed my mother a ton of respect. Just watching him be a father and a husband, I just knew what to do, okay? So I'm in this relationship I didn't ask for. But now I know how to be a father, so I turned it on. You know what I mean? And I was a great stepfather. I'm still in contact with my ex-stepchildren. And I did the best I could, you know. But after 6 years of being clean, praying for God's will for me, praying for the truth, praying for honesty in my life, it started bubbling up. You know, all of a sudden I'm uncomfortable. I'm in this relationship and I'm doing, you know, people would ask me, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, I don't know. Ask my wife. You know, I have no clue. I don't have that kind of control. And I'm getting sicker and sicker. And it dawned on me one morning in meditation and prayer it's time to tell the truth. I got to tell her the truth, you know, and that was one of the hardest things I had to go through. So I had to say, look, I'm not in love with you. I love you, but I'm not in love with you, and we need to get a divorce. And it was acrimonious, to say the least. It was very difficult. I just use that as a line, you know. I love you, but we fell out of love or something like that, you know, because I still wanted to get let off the hook for the truth. And so I went to my sponsor, and we did an inventory on it. And I explained to him, well, I was never really in love with her, but, you know, she came into my life, and I had an opportunity to be a good father and a good parent and everything, and I took it, and, you know, but now I got to get out of it. And he goes, okay, so you're basically a low-bottom drug dealer that decided to use a whole family to get exactly what you wanted and get a free ride. Is that right? Well, no, but, I mean, maybe, maybe, you know, yeah, that was the truth of the matter, you know. And I didn't want to tell her that truth. And in fact, I probably shouldn't have because she just wanted to know the truth. And I succumbed and I said, yeah, according to my sponsor, I'm a dirtbag who decided to take advantage of you for the past 9 years. And that was a terrible thing, you know, for her to hear because it broke her heart, absolutely broke her heart. I felt terrible. I had the worst remorse, the most... grief, everything that you go through a divorce. I asked my sponsor, I said, how long am I going to feel this way? He goes, well, how long were you together? It was about 9 years. Well, the spiritual axiom is that you're probably going to feel crappy for the amount of time that you made other people feel crappy. I'm like, I can't feel this way for 9 freaking years. And I didn't, you know, it hasn't been 9 years since the divorce. But at that time, I finally had an opportunity to say, okay, I'm not going to get into a relationship until I can ask somebody out, okay? I have to have that courage, you know. And the program gave me that courage where I could actually initiate relationships. And I wasn't good at it. I didn't know how to. My great-grandfather said, dating is like anything else. You got to practice. Get out there. Do it. Start asking people out. You know, it may work out. It may not work out. And so I started doing that. You know, I'd get on the web, the sites, you know, the Match and Bumble and the Hinge and the and all of these things. And, you know, and I would meet people and, you know, I'd ask them out and it would be right or it would be wrong. I wouldn't, I would almost know right away. You know, you get that first date and it's wonderful, you're having a good time. But a little bit later, I'd know, I'd get that feeling inside. The same kind of feeling I had when I knew I had to leave that relationship. And it was like, well, what kind of fear is this? It's, you're in the wrong place, you know. And I got good at saying, hey, you know, I had a great time with you, but, you know, I need to go. Because that's another very difficult part about relationships is telling other people it's time to move on, you know. So I started going through this. I had a relationship in AA, which was great. It was a great relationship for as long as it lasted. And but that had to end too, you know. And I kept asking my sponsor, I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I'm going to find anybody. And he goes, don't worry, God's got something for you. You know, I know it, Mike. I just know he's got somebody for you. And I waited, you know, and I kept practicing the dating, you know. And at one point I just said, look, I'm done. I'm off the sites. I'm off of everything. And what I was really looking for was somebody in the program or somebody at the gym, right? And, of course, I know that these are the two craziest places to find people. The craziest people. But that's only because I'm crazy, and, you know, I assume everybody else is, too. But then I was introduced to somebody, my coach and best friend at the gym, workout partner. He said, I know this person who works out in the morning, and I think you guys would get along. I said, all right, well, I'll give it a shot, you know, and yeah. It was fantastic. I found somebody that God put into my life that I didn't have to ask for. I mean, I made the phone call. Of course, I had to do that, you know. I'd already made that pact with myself. But all of a sudden, this person comes into my life, and we're in this zone. Like, I don't want to get beyond the book. I don't want to get beyond what we have to share from this. But, you know, I read a lot of spiritual texts, and there was somebody that brought me into love. If you could look at love as a space, that's where I was brought. And together we are in love, right? And so I found somebody from the gym. Guess what she does for a living? She's a spiritual grief counselor for hospice, okay? So all we do is we sit around and we talk about food, we talk about lifting, and we talk about spirituality. It's fantastic, you know? And I also had an opportunity to spend time with her because it had to go slow. You know, couldn't go fast. You know, she has her family, and I have my family, and we're going slow. And I had a chance to fall in love with her heart first before I fell in love with the outsides, you know, and all that kind of stuff. That came with it, but I got to fall in love with her heart first. And that is my experience. That's my personal experience with sex and relationships. I was going to dig into the book and just quote it like, you know, well, this is what it says, you know. But I decided just to tell you kind of my experience with with sex and relationships, you know, and I'll pass with that, I suppose.
Thank you, Mikey. That's great. Next, I will ask Allie to come up and share her experience.
Hi, I'm Allie. I'm a drug addict. God, you guys, if I'm being honest, I was asked to do this on Monday. And the type A inside of me, right? Like, I created this whole outline. I want to control every aspect of how this is going to come out of my mouth. Because this honestly is one of the hardest pieces in my life right now. And I'll get there. But so if I start sobbing at some point, like, it's, yeah, that's where we're at today. Just a little bit about me, right? Like, I started, you know, drinking, smoking when I was like 12 years old. I'm shooting dope at 14, smoking crack, you know, like my brother, I feel that I have never, like, had my own identity, right? I can feel my voice shaking. This is incredible. right? Like, I was, like, a super tomboy growing up, like, riding dirt bikes, snowboarding, like, skateboarding. So, like, I thrived with men, throughout my entire existence, basically. And growing up, you know, like, I've endured a lot of traumatic events. You know, everything you don't want to happen to a child, right? Like, those things have happened to me. And again, right, like, I'll work my way into that. So fast forwarding a lot of years, right, like, the first time I came into any type of 12-step program, I heard, you know, all of this 12-step stuff. I took this one piece that somebody said, right, like, take what you want, leave the rest. You know, so like me being a little thought demon that I am, I took the men with me and like I held these men hostage. Unfortunately, you know, and like that's just my truth, you know, and I did that for years and it kept me super, super sick in whatever type of fellowship I was working. I've done the AA, the HA, the NA, right, working my way into DA, all of these different programs, right? So I left the steps and I left the principles and what I looked like, right? Like I ran from my problems. I've always run. Like that's the best way that I can cope with, my life. You know, I'm very, very like verbally aggressive, right? Very verbally abusive towards anybody that's just trying to show me an ounce of love. Like I am incapable of receiving love from anybody, including my own family. You know, I'm untrustworthy. I'm selfish. I take anything that comes into my path. You know, I lie a lot. You know, even in sobriety, I've caught myself in quite a few lies, you know, by omission, whatever that looks like, you know, and destroying all relationships, you know, whether that's work, romantic relationships, my family, my friends. But, like, I approach relationships how I do my drugs, right? Like, more, and, like, I need to feel better. And that's what that looked like for me. So, you know, I heard when I was in Iowa at IEPAW, I heard Rich B say, water seeks its own level, right? And for me to identify, right, that, like, I'm literally insane. I'm attracting all of these insane men, you know, and, like, that's exactly where I thrive. So I used a lot of these behaviors and sex to, like, fill this God-shaped hole that I had within myself. And I love that we can talk about crack. We can talk about heroin. Like, it's so exciting to me because I just relate with Stevie so much, right? Like, nothing brought me to my knees faster than heroin and crack did. You know, like, listening to somebody's four-step that's an alcoholic, like, we are not the same. You know? So it was a long, treacherous journey. You know, I've been in and out of these programs for a long time, like I said. And so I got sober off of those two substances when was this? This is back in like 20, I don't know, everything's such a blur in my life. So back in 2014, last time I went to treatment, you know, I got sober off of that and I considered myself an alcoholic at the age of 16. You know, and I didn't understand the depth and weight that it held to call myself an alcoholic. I thought it was hilarious. You know, I thought it was so funny. It really wasn't. Because I didn't want to be here with any of you, you know, like I didn't take time to get to know anybody in the program, nor did I care. I didn't care. If you weren't serving me, like I wasn't here for that. So fast forwarding a little bit more, right, I got sober in 2017. So did I say my sobriety date? I don't even know. All right, perfect. Thank you for keeping me accountable here. So April 10th of 2017, I am actively sponsored. My sponsor, Tina H., was here last night with her husband. And, like, she's everything I aspire to be, you know, like, she's just such a great human being, and, like, she's super sassy, and, like, that's me to my core, you know, and she's an alpha female, so, like, initially, right, like, she, my mom heard her speak at some, you know, Al-Anon AA jam, and my mom's like, you should ask her to be your sponsor, and I'm like, absolutely not, absolutely not. Oh, I told myself I wasn't gonna swear, and I'm really sorry. No, right, she terrified me, like, another woman of that power, I don't want anything to do with that. Because I was scared, right? Like, I've been abused by women my entire life, and, like, never will I ever let a woman that fucking close to me ever again. So, Needless to say, I hit a lot of spiritual bottoms. You know, I went through 2 sponsors in 2 years, worked the steps in like 2 weeks, and in CA and AA and all of these things. And, you know, I found myself asking Tina to be my sponsor. And since that day, like every step that I've taken with her, I've had a spiritual experience. You know, and I can only hope to do that with the woman that I sponsor today. So, right, this theme that's in the book of you know, we're doing all these inventories, ridding these old ideas, and like how we do that is looking at our resentments, fears, sex, and this sane and sound ideal. And what plays into my sex life, you know, is resentment and fear, you know, and you just hit the nail on the head with that. The first like year was a little rocky with Tina, right? Like I'm posting my ass on Instagram. I'm doing all of these things. You know, and my sober sisters are busting me out to Tina and she's holding me accountable, right? That's her job, is to do that. And she wasn't very kind about it. And she's like, listen, like who I see and like who you're presenting as, right? Like this doesn't align. She's like, your head and your heart, like they do not align. So thus started a whole another treacherous journey of healing, right, from the inside out. And if anything that is sold, you know, like in any type of 12-step program, like DAA, AA, whatever, you know, like we sell spiritual awakenings here, you know, and I bought into it and I got that as a result of working all 12 steps. So I've gotten to, build all of these skills, and, you know, I was still being quite disastrous in my sex relations. So I was dating this newcomer kid, you know, when I was newly sober. And then fast forwarding a little bit, right, I was at one of my sponsor's weddings and crossed paths with this guy that I've been in a relationship with for 4.5 years now. And, you know, building that trust like you were talking about, right, like falling in love with somebody's heart and their mind, like that's important to me. Like today it's not really like the physical attraction, right, like that's always important. But, like, to fall in love with somebody's mind, like, there's nothing more powerful than that. And we did that, right? Like, I got the opportunity to work the steps, love myself before I got into this relationship. And creating that sane and sound ideal, right? Like, how I want to show up in a relationship, like, how I would ideally like a partner to show up in a relationship. And ask God to help me to live up to that. You know, because I'm not very great at living up to that. Like, I'm here for excitement, fun, right? We talked about this straight pepper diet. We were having a reckless conversation over Qdoba earlier, you guys. Let me tell you, yeah, like, that's me. That's me. I don't want to tell you on the details on that, but, yeah, right? The women that are in my life today are just like me, and I love it. I love it. They're so spicy. So right, like Bill has this concept that's kind of woven through the books, right? If we don't continue to grow together, you know, like we're growing apart. And I think it's important that, like, as my God, right, like when Tina walked me to the hand of God, like I haven't looked back since that day. And my ideals are continuously evolving. Like my God is continuously evolving. And like today, I'm in a super tough position, right? Like, I have a lot of unhealed trauma, and, like, I can present super well to the world. Nobody has a clue of what actually happens internally. I let about 2 people into my life, and that's Tina and maybe one of my sober sisters. Like, I literally do not trust women, and I still have a problem with it today. But it's getting better. You know, it's getting better. Where was I going with that? Oh, yeah, so this relationship, right? Like, I was supposed to be getting married in September. And in May, right, my family was like, yo, we need to know what's happening so we can book flights, right? And the next day, and this was on my birthday, so this was back in April. The following day, I had a conversation with my fiance, and I was like, listen, like, I think we need to postpone this wedding, right? And mutual agreement, right? There's a lot of, I thought it was going to go so left field. It didn't, right? When we bring God, when we bring these traditions, you know, of, like, unity, God being the ultimate leader, like, a mutual desire to make this work, beautiful things happen. And it's so incredible, right? Like, we were on the same page with that. And then 2 days ago, right, like I barely had the time to tell my sponsor about this before I'm spewing my heart to you. But I had a conversation with him the other day, and that looked like, hey, like I'm doing extensive trauma work right now, and like I can't be present in this relationship. And like it takes a lot of courage for me to admit that, right, because like I can do everything on my own. You know, like, I don't need anybody's money. I don't need your love. I don't need your affection. I don't need any of it. I can take care of myself. But that's not the reality today, right? Like, it doesn't serve me in DAA. It doesn't serve me anywhere in my life. Like, I need each and every one of you to, like, help carry me through this process when I can't carry myself. You know, like, I'm in this hard state of, like, I had the conversation, like, hey, I think I need to move out, right? And, like, take time apart so, like, I can actually work on myself. And another, right, like, God is super present, and he's like, I completely understand that decision, you know? And, like, I felt so loved and so supported in that, and, like, I had a lot of fear because there's a lot of people, right, that are close with my fiancé in the room, and they know he's such a great person. And, like, it really melts my heart. I feel like I can't be there for him. But I think the beauty, right? I called my sober sister on the way here, and I was like, listen, don't make my eyes sweaty. I'm not trying to do this today. And she's like, there's probably somebody in that room that needs to hear what you have to say, right? And there's so much hope that, like, as long as I continue to practice these principles in all of my affairs, right? And, like, page 19 is this great line. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. You know, and as long as all of these principles are laid out perfectly for us, you know, like, honesty with myself, you know, like, this hope, faith, courage, integrity, all of these things, and having this brotherly love, right, for another human being, I think there's so much hope in knowing that, like, I can carry through this with so much grace. You know, like, we don't have to fight about it. We don't have to, like, do anything reckless. Like, we serve at the same home group, right? I started this young people's group up in Madison after hearing Stevie and my sponsor in January. And, like, I have so many great home group members here supporting me. I love you guys. God. And we serve, and, like, we serve together, right? So I told him, listen, I don't want you to go anywhere. Like, I want you to continue to show up and serve, right? And, like, we get to do that together, and I'm really excited to, like, continue to be there to support him on his journey. And, God, I think it's important also to talk about, right, these relationships that I have, not only romantic relationships, but, like, oh, my God, 2 minutes, Jesus, Lord. So, right, like, with my family, you guys, like, right, I have a lot of women that have a hard time with their families, and, like, my mother was terrified of me for years, and I would show up to her at work and threaten her every single day. If not, I'm threatening my own life, you know, showing up to her job, and, like, she would sleep with her money on her. My dad would do the same thing, right, or my dad would fall asleep in my room waiting for me to get home, and I'd army crawl across the floor, grab money out of his wallet, and then I would disappear. Like, this is how I showed up for my family, you know, and stole a peace of mind from them for over a decade, you know. And today, like, my mom's my biggest fan. Like, she knows everything that's going on in my life and in my relationship today. And, like, I'm so loved and so supported. And, like, God shows me so much grace. And the best piece of that is, right, is, like, I get to continue to be of service, you know, with all of these beautiful, wild women that I sponsor, you guys. Like, that's the bright spot in my life. And, like, I'm on page 70, you know, it tells us when these things are troublesome, like, we throw ourselves harder into working with other alcoholics or drug addicts, whatever that looks like. So new to me, so I apologize if I use alcoholic a lot. So, right, like, I continue to serve on all of these young people committees, like, the home group level, like, at the area level, like, and I'm teaching all of my girls to do the same thing, you know, and I couldn't be more proud. And again, like, the best pieces about this is, like, we don't have to be perfect. I don't pretend to be perfect to the women that I sponsor, you know. So I don't have to be perfect to walk somebody to the hand of God, nor to take them through the 12 steps. So I'm extremely grateful to be here. Thank you.
Very much. Next, we are going to have Martha up to share her experience on sex and relationships.
Hi, Hi, my name is Martha. I'm an addict.
Hey, Martha.
I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. My home group is the DAA group of New Orleans. If you're ever down there on a Thursday, pop on in. We'd love to have you. I also know that God has a sense of humor because I tried to do the right thing, and I told the person that called me to speak that I did not want to pick my topic, that I was open to anything, and he was like, good, sex and relationships, and I was like, thanks, God. The only two things I know to share from the podium are my experience in the literature of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So to know where I got that experience, you have to know a little bit about where I came from. Growing up, my parents compared me to a baby deer. I was all knees and elbows and big eyes and awkward and just a skinny, like gangly, awkward thing. And I remained that way for quite some time. And big hair too, lots of hair. And something happened around the age that I turned 18 or 19. I stopped being so awkward, and I really discovered boys. I was going to say men, but boys at that age. And I'll be very honest about something. If you're not too bad on the eyes and you're a little funny and you like to party, the South is very kind to you, especially if you're a girl. And I had a great time. I had dates to football games. I got invited to a lot of, like, VIP things that I was probably like, oh, this is so much fun. I don't need college. I don't need, you know, I'll just do this. And I did do that. And it's funny because what happened is, unbeknownst to me, I started harnessing these God-given sex powers. And it tells us in this book that, you know, they're God-given and they're never to be loathed. But I didn't know that. I didn't know this was happening to me. And, you know, that easy, like, bat of the eyelashes and flip of the hair and stuff that we just develop over time. And I just become manipulative in nature. My sex instincts go hand in hand with my active drug addiction. And while it was super fun for a while and super easy to wrangle for a while, just like my drug use, I stopped having a choice. And at the end of my active addiction, sex was no longer a choice. It was about survival, and it was the only currency I had. It's the only way I knew how to feed myself or to get a roof over my head or to stay high. And that is the truth, and that is what it looks like for me. So, I'm not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. I do not tell sponsees not to date in the first year. It doesn't say that in the literature. I am there to hold their hand when things don't go well. In 2018, I was about 7 months sober, and I got into a relationship. And, you can't see it at the time. It's all in reflection. But I'm not living by these spiritual principles. And this man becomes more important than recovery. And it is the most life-changing relationship of my life because it quite literally almost killed me. And I rode that back into homelessness and back into violent, horrible behavior. And let me make this very clear. It is not that man's fault. I make my own choices. I am selfish and self-centered. And if it makes me feel good, I will do it. You know, and I was incapable of being honest with women about my sex inventory and about how I felt about men and past trauma and all of those things. You know, so I do that, and then I get sober again. And so what happens? We take a sex inventory, right? And I'm a little bit sober, and I have these, I have this sex inventory. And some of them are obvious to me now that I'm sober, like don't have sex or drugs. Like those are obvious behaviors that need to be changed. Some of them are not so obvious. My first job in sobriety this time was I was a cake decorator at a Food Lion in Charleston, South Carolina. And that's right. Nothing like a frozen cake. And I was unprepared for when they hired a new manager. And he walked in and he was older and he was a little awkward. And his eyes went kind of two different ways. And I realized if I paid some attention to him, he gave me the schedule I wanted. And it was quickly pointed out to me. My sponsor was like, man, you have all your nights free. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I do. That's me manipulating again. It's not about sex. It's about how I use being a female. Like, I have relationships with other women that are gay, and I know that some of my actions in the past have been inappropriate because I can still manipulate them just as easily. So what happens? I have this sex inventory. I start changing this behavior. And I don't know how to do that without good sponsorship. You know, if I did not have women that came before me, I would not know that it's not okay to flirt with your boss to get the schedule you wanted. And it's weird how things start to change. I had a guy at a meeting one time make a comment about the yoga pants I was wearing, and it's stuff I'm so unaware of. And so I started wearing sweats. You know, not because it's wrong to wear yoga pants, but because, you know, I can take these little actions to not affect other people. So what happens as I start doing this? Got this sex inventory. I've been sober a little bit. And my sponsor, last summer, we did some sex ideals. And she said, I want you, you know, you write down, like my new friend pointed out, you know, we try to live up to these. We grow towards these ideals. And then she had me, you know, build a man, build a bear, write my ideals for this man. And I did. And she put them side by side. And she said, who are you to ask God for this when you are most certainly not this? Bro, my soul hurt. But I wasn't, because I didn't know. I hadn't lived in spiritual principles long enough. I was still, you know, like my friend Andrew said, I'm always making amends. I still had a lot of space to grow. This past fall, it was suggested to me by a very dear friend of mine that I should start journaling, not every night, but just when it occurs to me about the man I would have God send me. And this was not like build a man. This is not like I want him 6'2" and chiseled, you know, which is not even my type. But start writing about this man. And I did. When I would think about it, I would write that I wanted him to be kind. And I wanted him to love his family. And I wanted him to be God-centered. And I wanted him to love my kid when the time came. And what happened is God did not deliver this man in a nice little bow on my door. What happened is I became the woman I was writing about. I have become. And while we do not do this perfectly, I have become more kind, and I have become more patient, and I have become more willing to grow. This is the part I'm dreading. I currently am in a relationship. I can't even look over there. And the first 3 months of that relationship were awful for me. And not because he is wonderful, because I was filled with so much self-centered fear, crippling, alcoholic, the fabric of my life is shot through with it, fear. And I was such a victim. And the biggest fear for any woman or man that is listening, let me tell you that this fear needs to be worked through, because it is not true. My biggest fear was, how could you want to be with someone who's been so used and so broken? Why would he ever want that? And I quickly find out it is none of my business. And so I held on to this fear for about 3 months, and finally I went to my sponsor, as you should. I should have done 3 months earlier, and I said, I'm terrified. I said, I can't do this. I'm anxious all the time. I'm not good enough for this man, and da 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 da. And she said, have you talked to God about it? No. And so what happened, it says, in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. And here's the kicker. The right answer will come if we want it. And from that day forward, I started inviting God into my relationship. I invited him on my dates. I don't invite him everywhere, but I invited him most places. You know, before I made phone calls and before I responded to text. And I'm sure he will tell you there are days like yesterday that you can tell from my text messages I had not invited God into that relationship. But I do it to the best of my ability. And let me tell you, where God is present, there is no room for fear. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And it's so funny, because I know this from working with other women and from doing outreach and from being in Alcoholics Anonymous and Drug Addicts Anonymous for so long. But I promise you this, your partner should not drain you. Your partner should not take from you. It should not hurt to love someone. And so when I invite God into my relationship, what it looks like for me is, what can I do for this man? What can I add to his life? Not what can I take from him? And the more I think, should I ask more questions? Can I listen better? Do I need to just be with him today? The more time I spend thinking about what I can add to his life, the less time there is for self-centered, selfish fear, thinking, what am I not getting out of this relationship? And in turn, when I become a better girlfriend, I'm a better mother. When I'm a better mother, I'm a better girlfriend. When I'm a better daughter, I'm a better sister. When I'm a better sister, I'm a better daughter. The more I add to people's lives, the less I think about what I'm not getting. That relationship that really changed my life, the one that almost killed me, let me be very clear about this. I'm not a victim of that relationship. What I am now is armed with the facts about myself without God in my life. Mm-hmm. And I use that to sponsor other women and to share my experience. I will never be a victim of my past. I will be a vessel for hope. Mm-hmm. That is what my past is built for. You know, how many of you have been to a wedding? that's how that question started. But I think that you hear them read that verse from Corinthians all the time, you know, about love, da 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 da. But it's true. Love is patient and love is kind. And that's not just for my partner. That is for my child. That is especially true for the women in my life. And it's for all the members of Drug Addicts Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous. I don't care if you are hurting. We love you and we will be patient with you. Thank you very much for your time. Yeah.